relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
When Joe Biden blamed the gun lobby, he was talking about Americans like you. And along with countless other Democrats this week, he was shamefully suggesting that Republicans are somehow okay with letting school shootings happen. They're not okay with it. This rhetoric is highly divisive and dangerous, and most importantly, it's wrong. It has no place in our politics. As always, in the wake of these tragedies, the various gun control policies being pushed by the left would have done nothing to prevent the horror that took place. Absolutely nothing.
Very somber presentation by President Trump at the recent NRA convention after the Uvalde shooting. What does it mean for the midterms? How is the MAGA movement going? We're going to ask somebody who is best positioned to answer that question. This is a very special one-on-one with the founder, the editor-in-chief of one of the best conservative websites out there. It's not just because I write for them. It's American Greatness, and he's Chris Busker. Chris, welcome back to America First One-on-One.
Oh, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Chris, so much to discuss. I want to do a deep dive on the future of America First, MAGA, what we've seen in the primaries, and basically why you created this superb website that has luminaries like Victor Davis Hanson writing regularly. But let me get, you know, to the very pragmatic very quickly. We're 5 months away from the midterms. It seems like we're stuck in some kind of chronic hysteresis. The LP is stuck in a groove, and it's back to the Democrats. It's more abortions, less guns. I think we've heard this before, haven't we, Chris?
We've heard it over and over and over again. I'm waiting for the mostly peaceful protest to break out again this summer, because the playbook is always the same, isn't it?
It always is. So do you think this will be, I know 5 months is a lifetime in politics, but do you really think that this will be the mantra, this will be the platform for the Democrats? Because it's hard to think of what they can point at in the last 15 months that is something to be proud of.
Joe Biden sent out a tweet, or somebody sent it out in his name. It was his official Twitter account this morning, and he was talking about how bad the economy was when he took over as president in January of 2021. And because of him, his team, and his policies, that we now have the most, in quotes, robust recovery ever in American history, never mind the almost 10% inflation, $6, $7 gas in a lot of parts of the country. People not being able to get jobs, supply chain breakages, not even shortages, supply chain breakages all over the place. And this guy's on Twitter literally this morning talking about how great it all is.
Yeah, so this goes to the question, and I don't know if we're wasting time raising it. Are they deliberately ruining America, or is it just they're such hostages to their ideology that they can't see anything else except their ideology? Because you see that statement that he made, what was it, last week, middle of last week, with regards to the oil crisis, the fuel crisis, and he said, you know, this is the beautiful transition to electric vehicles. And then you just stop and you think, they wouldn't be doing anything differently, Chris, if their intent was to destroy America.
Well, yeah, right. It doesn't have to be an either or. Is it just ideology,
yes,
or are they doing it on purpose? Like, I would think about this as a both and. And that is, when you know what you want, you can take advantage of opportunities as they arise. And I think the Democrats and the secular left really, really knows what it is that they want. Along a whole host of issues. And so some of it is certainly by design, but other things are opportunistic. So when things pop up, you say, aha, okay, this is a good time, place, opportunity in order to enact this or that wish list item. And so they're able to react very quickly on these things. I mean, look, the thing about, look, here's the dirty secret of electric cars. which nobody on the left, I think, even knows about hardly, at least not the people in the Biden administration don't seem to know this, is that we don't produce enough electricity in this country to power a nationwide fleet of electric cars.
Yeah.
Right. So someplace like the, I think there's this like this, I don't know, it's like this fantasy world where, you know, anything from oil and gas is bad because, you know, you have to burn it or whatever. Okay, and you know what, electricity? Well, we just plug that into the wall and just magically comes out. Like, you have to do something to generate electricity, too. We don't have enough power plants.
Yeah, and then
the kind of electricity that's required for a national fleet of electric vehicles.
And then that is the dirty secret that nobody talks about. We literally do not have enough energy production. If we started building a whole armada of nuclear power stations, we might be ready in 5 years. But we do not have enough electricity to charge a nation of EVs. But how about this, Chris? We've got to stop for a second and just, you know, have a snapshot of reality. Yesterday, on Monday, we have the incumbent in the White House use the National Defense Procurement Act, use the, you know, the War Department powers as was to manufacture solar panels, whilst his cabinet members are saying, you know, the Secretary of Commerce says, we don't have any ability to influence the production of baby formula. No, but we can use wartime powers to buy solar panels from China, but not to feed our babies, Chris.
It's unbelievable. It really says a lot about where the priorities are. I mean, these are, you know, as our mutual friend J.D. Vance likes to say, you know, this is a bunch of childless cat ladies who are running the administration. They don't think about baby formula. It's like a total abstraction to them because in so many cases, they don't have any kids, don't want any kids. And so, yeah, you know, I guess, you know, it's just those weird people in those square and rectangle states in the middle of the country who have kids. And if they can't feed them, too bad. At least we can get solar panels by using government power to require that people use them. And by the way, roll back the tape 14 years, you know, 13 or 14 years. You know, one of the first priorities of the Obama administration, of which Biden was vice president, was to enact massive solar and wind subsidies back then.
Solyndra. Who can forget the boondoggle of Solyndra to all of Obama's buddies? Yes, again, it's a chronic hysteresis. It's a broken record. We're talking to Chris Buskirk, founder, editor-in-chief of American Greatness, amgreatness.com, amgreatness.com on Twitter at the Chris Buskirk. Chris, are you on Truth Social?
I am.
Good.
At Chris Buskirk.
He didn't need...
Sorry. Actually, it's at Buskirk. Sorry.
At Buskirk. Right. Even cooler. Yeah. All right. Let's, for those who aren't familiar with the website, why? What are you doing? Go to it now. Bookmark it. Before we move on to our next meaty subject, as a successful businessman, as a family man, as a, you know, successful conservative, why did you decide to get into the media business? Can you wind back the clock for us right now and tell us why you created American Greatness?
Yeah, I can. I've told this story a bunch of times, and I suspect I'm going to keep telling the story for a lot of years to come because it bears repeating. And if we're, you know, I had this idea for American Greatness at the end of 2015. It at that point was, I think, pretty obvious to everybody that Donald Trump was going to become the nominee, or at least was obvious to a lot of us that Donald Trump was going to become the nominee of the Republican Party in 2016, notwithstanding the significant efforts on the part of a lot of establishment Republicans did this to derail the Trump train back then. And what I realized at the time, and I was early to Trump in the summer of 2015, because he started talking about things that had historically been central to American conservatism. So things like, you know, how do we build a country that has a sustainable, growing, prosperous middle class? You know, how do we build a manufacturing base? China, illegal immigration, you know, all of these things in the Trump telling of the universe, which I think was right. You know, these things all are important to the prosperity of the broad middle in this country. And so that really resonated with me. That was something, even, you know, you talk about sort of foreign policy restraint, which was central to is central to the Trump movement. What I realized is those things had gone out of fashion among sort of establishment Republicans sometime from, I don't know, maybe after the end of the Cold War until Trump came on the scene. So for 30 odd years. And I just saw all of the establishment organs in the conservative media lining up, not just to oppose Trump, but really to do absolutely anything that they could do to discredit him personally and politically, and this was important, and all of the people who supported him.
Yes.
And my insight at that time, which I think has been proven true over time, is that the America First view of American politics and of the world needed some type of media cover. It needed an institution that could articulate and defend the ideas that Donald Trump was talking about. He was doing a great job, build the wall, and you know that so forth. But you know there needed to be a media presence that right. did for him what National Review did for Ronald Reagan 45, 50 years ago,
and
that was the idea.
Yeah, and you filled a very, very needy vacuum, and I'm delighted. I'm honored to be a part of that. You've got to bookmark it, please. Amgreatness.com, amgreatness.com. And if you enjoy our deep dive one-on-ones with the newsmakers, don't forget to subscribe to America First. Go to your favorite platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, America First. Never miss an episode. Write a review and share the links. Do it today. If you haven't registered, join us for our amazing trip of a lifetime 10 days later this year in the Holy Land with my superb colleague at Salem, Dinesh D'Souza, the director of 2,000 Mules. We are going to the Holy Land to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Even if you've been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. And I'm not vaccinated. They've dropped all their restrictions, so you've got no excuse. Register today. Call 855-565-5519. That's standwithisraeltour.com. 855-565-5519. Standwithisraeltour.com. You don't want to miss it. Dear friends, you know my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll get $90 off a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. They took over 2 years to develop. They're designed to wear indoor and out. I've already worn out my first pair of My Slippers, and they're made with the same amazing MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue and lined with real suede. Call 800-829-8468. Use promo code Gorka for that massive discount, or just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and put in the secret code G-O-R-K-A. This offer won't last long. You won't regret it. They are the best slippers I have ever owned. And $90 off MyPillow.com. Do it today. Promo code G-O-R-K-A.
Chris, I want to talk about the recent political developments in terms of primaries. Incredible. What is he, like 112-7 in terms of endorsement? Just unheard of success for President Trump. But before we get to that, since I just mentioned Dinesh, let me ask you, because I'm involved, I'm in the movie, Salem produced it, I've got a financial stake in it, I think it's amazing, more than 1 million downloads the first 6 days, more than 100,000 DVDs already mailed out, the most successful political documentary by the figures in more than a decade. Have to ask you, impact on the midterms, when you have so many people who call themselves conservatives who are telling the president live on TV, like Stuart Varney, it kind of blew my mind, saying, oh, you got to stop talking about that stuff. Don't talk about what happened then. Talk about the next election. I think this is a wake-up call to many people who don't even call themselves conservatives. Your reaction to the evidence Dinesh and True the Vote found?
Yeah, everybody who has not seen this movie, 2,000 Mules, should watch it. It is very, very well researched. The evidence that it presents, I think, is conclusive. And they do it, and then they take the next step, which is they take the truth that has been ignored and or suppressed, and they present it in a way that's really aesthetically very powerful. And so it's a very, very good movie. It doesn't take long to watch, but I think that it will have a pretty significant impact in the midterms. And here's how. I don't know. It's hard for me to quantify for those people who were not sure if there's those sort of swingy type voters. I don't know what impact, if any, it has on those people. But I will tell you this. I think it has a big impact on getting our people out to vote. And this had been a concern, I think to some extent still is a concern among sort of political professionals, was this, which is if a small percentage of our voters think that there's no point in voting, that can make the difference
yes.
in elections.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a lot. It's not like it has to be 20%. It could be 2% in a lot of states.
Right.
If our people just are disheartened and they don't go out and vote. But I think what 2,000 Mules does and some of the political efforts that people have where, you know, there's ballot initiatives around election integrity in some states around the country. In the aggregate, all of these things are actually very motivating. To our people and to those people who are either who are skeptical or maybe were in danger of being blackmailed and not voting. I think it actually says, okay, we know what happened. There's action we can take, and part of that is voting.
Again. Right.
So I think it does have a very positive impact.
Right. We're not crazy, and they failed to gaslight us. So, guys, listen to Chris. If you haven't seen it, go to salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com to watch 2,000 Mules. Dinesh has dropped the price so even more people can see it. Okay, let's talk about what's happened in the last few weeks, couple of months. It seems like he is, you know, the king. I don't think we have a kingmaker of his ilk in terms of historic endorsements and the success of those. What does that look like after November? Because whenever they come on the show, I ask the MAGA people, I ask the Matt Gaetz of the world, the MTGs, the Jim Jordans, what is the power relationship between America First and the swamp, or rather, you know, the rhino establishment class? And my problem is this, that you know, we can have loads of great primaries, even loads of great new America First candidates, but even if they win the seats, Chris, the levers of power are still in the hands of the people who have seniority. So is it going to be a massive sprint to the last 100 meters and then, you know, the parachute pops out of the back and America First is drastically slowed down after November? How do we express the success of the president's primary endorsements into America First here in this stinking city?
The America First candidates who are running, especially the new candidates, right? There are a handful of them already in Congress, both in the House and the Senate. You can sort of rattle off who they are. Fewer, obviously, in the Senate than in the House. But you know, take the Senate as an example. We've got two fantastic candidates who I think are likely to win their seats. So we've got J.D. Vance, who's now the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in Ohio.
Yeah.
Ohio is a Trump plus eight or Trump plus nine state. JD is almost certain to become a United States senator. And then here in Arizona, we've got Blake Masters, who's running, is still in the primary. Our primary is not until August, but President Trump endorsed him last Thursday. I think he's now becomes a prohibitive favorite to win the primary. And then of the candidates who are running here in Arizona, he's literally the only person, the only Republican who has a good chance of beating Mark Kelly, who's the incumbent Democrat senator here, and I think has a very good chance of beating him in Arizona, which, as you know, is not Ohio. You know, it's not a Trump plus eight or Trump plus nine state, but Blake can win that seat. What the United States Senate looks like when you have Senator Vance and Senator Masters occupying two out of maybe 51 or 52 Republican
right.
seats, you know, and they go and they can link arms with somebody like a Josh Hawley from Missouri. This starts to become an actual working minority inside of the Republican caucus, young, smart, energetic, and powerful. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of senators to move that caucus. And we'll have, you know, I think come January of next year, I think things start to look a lot better for the America First movement inside the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, we just got to do something about Mitch McConnell retiring earlier than I think he would like to retire. Follow him right now. He's at Buzzkirk, I think, at Buzzkirk on Truth Social. Is that
correct?
Right? And yep. The Chris Buzzkirk on Twitter, and the website is amgreatness.com. Chris, you have done something remarkable in terms of having a place for the intellectual activities of America First to be spelled out by, you know, crucial voters, and not just voters, but thinkers in that community. Have we done enough of the heavy lifting
in the last 2 years. Tell us what your list of druthers has in terms of what else has to be fleshed out in the MAGA intellectual universe.
Yeah, have we done enough? No. I mean, if you ask me that next year, or if I achieve every goal for at American Greatness that we have, I'll still say no. And if we achieve and exceed every goal 5 years from now, I'll still say no. There's always a lot of work to do.
Well, you're a very successful businessman, and that's the right attitude, right?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think it is. We're never complacent. We've always got to, keep our feet moving, because there really is a lot to do. I mean, we sort of know what our goals are in general, but we need to achieve them. We've achieved some of them, but there's lots left to do. It's not like we're on the 1 yard line of getting everything done. We're still like deep in our own territory. I mean, the thing about the Trump movement, about Donald Trump, was that he shined a light on all of those things that had been ignored for a very, very long time. Like I was talking about earlier, it's the issue of how do we deal with China? How do we deal with the fact that the globalists in our country had exported the United States manufacturing base, that we've exported our middle class, that we have, tens of millions of illegal immigrants in this country that have been let in over the past 20 or 30 years. And, what does that do to middle class wages? What does that do to neighborhoods? All of these things. We know what those things are, but we need to implement the fixes. And so part of our job is not just identifying these things. We have to keep up the drumbeat that, just because we talked about them for the 4 years of the Trump administration, those things didn't all get done because the entrenched forces opposing us were significant. And so we still have a lot of work to do on immigration. We still have to rebuild the American manufacturing base. And it's the only way we're ever going to rebuild the American middle class, which is central to the success of the long-term success of the American project. If we don't do that and our middle class continues to suffer and to shrink, then I don't know how we sustain the sort of self-government and the sort of country that we have grown to know and to expect and that we want to give to our kids.
Is there anything in the you're talking about very concrete policy areas? Is there anything in the more philosophical domain? There's this argument on the forming national economic nationalism, the Hazzoni book, and everything else. Is there something that you think still is a little bit too amorphous that we have to tackle head on philosophically?
Yeah, there is. And that is the role of faith in public life.
Yes.
And this, I think, is actually central. I like, the Hazzoni book. I read it. I think it's a very good book. I am sympathetic to a lot of these sort of economic nationalism arguments, as you know. I mean, I bang on and on about manufacturing and the middle class and wages and all of those things. And I think those things are right. And we need to do something about them. Those are very hard, quantifiable, prescriptive areas that where we can act. But I still come back to this thing and this idea that what we do not talk about enough in America is the role of faith in public life.
Yes.
And in private life. We've sort of bought the lie that the separation of church and state somehow means that we're not supposed to talk about faith anytime, but I don't know, Sunday between 9 and 11 in the morning.
I'm so glad you raised this. I mean, can I just hear in front of our millions of listeners, just help everybody to understand the disestablishment clause, the disestablishment concept of our Constitution says only two things. There must be no state religion and nobody can be punished by the state for believing the wrong religion. That's it. End of story. It's not that you can't pray in schools. It is that there is no sanction of religion or punishment for being quote unquote of the wrong faith. That's all it is, Chris.
That's all it is. I mean, look, here's the truth is that there is no successful civilization in the history of mankind that has not had some sort of super dominant religion inside of that civilization. Do we want to have a civilization in which there is, as you say, there's religious tolerance, people aren't persecuted for being, I don't know, Methodist versus Presbyterian or something? Of course, right? Of course we want that. But we also have to recognize that by pushing faith out of public life, by trying to ghettoize it, we've actually really made our civilization poorer. And let me go one step further. We still have a civil religion. We still have a national religion. The war here is are we going to have a biblical-based national consensus, or are we going to have a secular consensus? Right. And I don't mean one that believes in the Constitution. I mean, wokeism is the alternative religion.
Right, that's another religion, whether it's environmentalism, whether it's wokeification, it's a secular cult, it's a religion. And what, you know, the other way of expressing it that I like, and I didn't come up with it, is that our founding fathers knew that you didn't have to be a Christian to live in America as an American, but the value system of America was based on Christian values. Now, that's a fine distinction, but is a crucial, crucial distinction. And I think we have to. Let's talk offline, Chris. I have some ideas. We need to brainstorm on this issue. We're talking to Chris Buskirk, the founder, the editor-in-chief at American Greatness, amgreatness.com. All right, I think that's enough. For those who aren't watching us but are listening, that was a transvestite. That was a drag queen performing in front of... How are children allowed into a bar to begin with, minors? And then what parents are taking them to an advertised drag queen event that says, that has massive neon signs on the wall of the bar saying, it's not going to lick itself? Chris, I wish that we didn't have to talk about these things. But I have a theory, and I want to run it past you, that it's issues like this, and this may be the issue. If you look at the attempt to deny the service at the hosting site for Matt Walsh's new film, What is a Woman? The left is super sensitive to this issue of transgenderism, I think because this is perhaps the most powerful issue that will get people off their backsides who otherwise aren't political and are going to say, this insanity that is supported and funded by the left and is targeting my children has to stop. Do you agree that this could be one of the most influential cultural triggers, to use their phrase, in coming months?
It can be. I think it's shaping up that way for sure. Anything that revolves around people's children, I think, is extremely powerful, and it should be. As parents, we have a responsibility to protect our children, to raise them right. And when you see evil people coming after kids this way, like what we saw in this video, that gets people's ire up, and it should, and it absolutely needs to stop. There is, I think we cannot as people who back just basic decency. This is not even a right-left issue, though it's becoming one. It's people who just support basic decency and treating kids right. There is almost nothing that can be done that is over the line to stop this. Like, this is an attack on small children. It is the sexual exploitation of kids for the pleasure of adults, and it's evil, and it has to stop.
Are you seeing enough action? Because, you know, we're seeing culture warriors on the right picking up this issue. I don't see much happening in the conservative establishment. It's a little bit like January the 6th, that we have political prisoners to this day rotting in a gulag not far from this studio. And if it weren't for, you know, Matt Gaetz or going to the prison with MTG, with, you know, people who we know are patriots like Louis Gohmert, we barely would know about this issue. So is it really up to us? Is it up to the private citizens? Or can the rhinos ignore this even longer?
Yeah, no, it's up to the private citizens. It's up to parents and people of good faith. Political people will make a political calculation on this, and they'll be afraid of the issue because they live in a different, they live in a sort of detached world that's very sort of media driven. And the media obviously is generally supportive of this type of thing, whereas normal people are not. And so it is going to be up to the decent people in this country, of which I still believe there's a supermajority, to make this type of exploitation of kids stop. And it has to be done at the local level. Like, this is as an example, the video that you just showed, which was something that took place it was a discrete, quantifiable event. It took place in a particular location at a particular time on a particular day. There was nothing for there was nothing for Mitch McConnell to do about that, you know, or there was only something for the parents, and not just for parents, but for other people of goodwill to do about that, and to make it stop. Like, that is the sort of thing where direct action, I think, makes a lot of sense, which means put 5,000 parents at that bar.
Yeah. Bingo. Right? Bingo.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to raise the topic that's of greatest concern for me as somebody who worked in the Trump administration in the White House, and I want to get your take on it. It's the bench. We are, you know, a couple of years away from having to staff the administration. The president is running. If we can have clean elections, he will stroll back into the White House, given the disaster that has been the Biden regime. I just don't see – I see too many people discouraged, number one. And, of course, why wouldn't you be discouraged if Peter Navarro is being put in leg irons at Reagan Airport because he is being subpoenaed by Nancy's witch hunt, and that's a person who was my colleague in the White House. Why would you volunteer to work in a conservative administration? And secondly, I don't see a lot of work. I've had some discussions with Mark Meadows and others, but I don't see a lot of heavy lifting being done in building the bench right now. And 2 years really is not a long time. Wasn't Reagan right, Chris, that policy is personnel, and doesn't someone around President Trump have to grasp this nettle by the thorns?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. Personnel is definitely policy. I think that the Trump administration got a late start on it because they were misled by people who they should have been able to trust, but it turns out they couldn't trust.
Yeah.
But the Presidential Personnel Office in 2020, the final year of the administration, was extremely well run.
Oh, when Johnny McAtee came back after John Kelly, the scumbag, got him out, kicked him out of the White House. The last 6 months were superlative, and Johnny was doing amazing things. But it was 6 months, Chris.
Yeah, that's it. Now picture if he starts that work. Before the transition, before the election, and if he is running PPO, the Presidential Personnel Office, from day one, and I don't mean day one election day, I don't mean day one inauguration day, I mean from the time that the president announces that he is running for election again, that he's running again, then what if you have those people brought back together? Would they get the band back together? They did do a very good job in 2020.
Right.
They interviewed tons and tons of people. They know who's who. And they could just pick up where they left off. I think that the appointments that we would see out of the next Trump administration would be quite good.
So you think we have enough people who haven't been deterred by what they've done to the Steve Bannons, the Manaforts, the Navarros of the world?
I do, actually. I've thought about this a lot. I mean, there are a lot of people who look at that and say, that's bad. I don't want that to happen to me. But the stakes for this country are really high. And if there's an opportunity to go in and do something positive for the country, I'm going to do it. Like, I've heard that from a lot of very well qualified, accomplished people.
All right. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better. What would make me feel a lot better if somebody with the initials CB became, the Trump point person on cyber. That would make me feel, or social media, that would make me feel much better. Chris, I might just have to put you on my list. This is America First One-on-One with Chris Buskirk, the founder, the editor-in-chief, the Grand Mufti of American Greatness, amgreatness.com, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Okay, let's have some fun in the last couple of minutes we have with you, Chris. Let's imagine it's happened. We've built the bench. President Trump has won. It's 21st of January 2025. We're walking back into the White House for the second term. Nothing can stop him because he only gets one more term. So this is where we fix everything. I have a couple of ideas. Number one, you've got about a dozen hard bastards I'm prepared to volunteer who go around the departments in twos, making sure the cabinet members do what they're meant to do and don't undermine the president every week. And if you don't do it, we get to tell the president to pitch him. And then we move departments out of the swamp. We should get rid of education and EPA. And the ones we don't want to get rid of, we move them. We take state to South Dakota. We take, agriculture to Wyoming, get rid of the deep state people who want to live here in D.C. and have patriots in those buildings. What would Chris Buskirk, Mr. American Greatness, like to see from a second Trump term? What's the top of your list?
Oh, that's easy. Top of my list is I would like to see the administration work with some friendly governors in red states where they have red legislatures, you know, where we have a so-called trifecta. And what I'd like to see the states enter into basically consent orders or compacts with the federal government, where the federal government sends a lot of the power back into those states, that state power that's been taken under the Chevron decision and elsewhere away from the states, and then basically you set up these compacts or consent decrees where the states get it back. I think that's actually
okay.
Maybe
I love this. I haven't heard this before. This is fascinating. Tell us what kind of issues this is most relevant to. Where do the states need to get their powers back first, Chris?
Every place. I mean, the thing is that the states have become de facto vassals of the federal government because of the way that the federal government doles out tax money to the states. So the states just administer the money. And so, you know, if you want your highway funds or, you know, you want funds for your state National Guard or whatever, then you have to do any number of things.
Yeah.
And it could be anything from, you know, change the drinking age in your state to adopt this or that trans policy, or, you know, it really is almost everything. And so, you know, I think a way to revitalize state power to allow states, and I don't care if it's Massachusetts or Alabama, they should all get to make as many decisions as possible through their legislatures, is to have a friendly presidential administration enter into these agreements with the states that takes away the federal power. In other words, cedes it back to the states.
It's like if you read the 67-page leaked SCOTUS brief on Roe v. Wade, this beautiful phrase again and again and again, let this issue reside with the states where their citizens can argue it with their representatives, because that's why we are a republic. What a great idea. Right. I see a new article coming from a certain Chris Boskirk that we'll have to read about this. In the meantime, go to the page, Am Greatness Bookmark It. Follow him on Twitter, on social, Truth Social. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, wherever you are. Keep your head in a swivel, watch your six, hold the line. Never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
I have a particular set of skills. A famous line, a meme-worthy line from the Taken series of movies starring Liam Neeson, who has turned 70 today. Many happy returns of the day to you, Liam, a man who started his career, well, I think the earliest films he was in were Excalibur, where he played the knight Gawain, a classic, the Bowman Excalibur. And then for me, from my childhood, the fantasy adventure Krall, where he played one of the ruffians, Keegan. Happy birthday to you. That is toxic masculinity, and we love it. The more toxic, the better. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem News Channel. Across the nation to millions of listeners, we will celebrate that masculinity because it is what built the greatest civilization on God's green earth, the Judeo-Christian civilization, of which America is the apotheosis, the pinnacle. This is the civilization they want to destroy, they want to undermine, because for them, America is the problem. We must be punished. Somebody's calling in on the hotline. I don't know who's calling in on the hotline. Mr. G, will you check who that is? We have an amazing set of guests for you today. Lord Black will be with us. We will be talking to somebody who may be one of the MAGA candidates that will help take over the Senate after the November midterm elections. And of course, you, please, sound off here on America First, 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. Yesterday, we celebrated the 78th anniversary of D-Day, the combined operation by the Allies of more than 160,000, not 160, as Millie said yesterday in Normandy. No, 160,000 Allied troops, most of them GIs and Marines, that marked the beginning of the end for Hitler's Third Reich. Yesterday, whilst we were commemorating it, whilst I read the letter from Supreme Allied Commander Europe, General Eisenhower, to the troops who were about to land on the beaches in front of the withering machine gun fire from the German machine gun nests. What was the White House doing? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The White House that has seen fit today, as we were preparing for the show, to give the White House podium to Matthew McConaughey for half an hour to talk about gun violence in America, because I have no idea why. He's a citizen of Uvalde, as are many other people. What does that mean in terms of his qualifications to solve gun crime in America? Nothing, really. But whilst they were celebrating Pride this, Pride that, meeting with, what is it, last week they had Korean or Taiwanese pop stars, what they weren't doing is commemorating D-Day, is remembering those who died to stop fascism. The White House, for the second year running, forgot. Or did they forget? Or did they deliberately not mention D-Day? It took until 8:45 last night, long after, given the time zone change, it was no longer D-Day's commemoration in Europe where it happened. It was already the 7th of June, not the 6th of June. It was way past midnight. A statement was released by the White House. Not at 8:45 in the morning, 8:45 p.m. after D-Day had already occurred 78 years ago, yesterday. Now, you can ask, you can posit whether it was just an accident, which I find hard to believe. There are lots of people in the building whose job it is to prepare statements on all kinds of inane, politically correct, woke things. And the idea that they didn't pick up a newspaper in the press office, they didn't see a photograph of the D-Day landings, maybe it was deliberate. But the bottom line is, it matters not which scenario it is.
whether it is rank incompetence or whether it is an ideological decision not to celebrate the 18-year-old, sometimes 17-year-old young men. Let's just stop for a moment. If you're on one of those troop carryings, those landing craft, and if you're one of the GIs at the front, standing right behind the ramp, and you've vomited up the breakfast that you're trying to keep down out of fear, out of seasickness, being buffeted by the waves, and you hear the shelling, and you hear Hitler's zipper, the MG-42, cycling at 12,000 rounds a minute, firing into the water, firing into the landing craft, and you're at the front, and the order is given, and the ramp is dropped. What makes you move forward? What makes you jump into the water? What makes you put one boot in front of the other? It's not the Soviet army. You're not being bayoneted from behind. You're not being forced at pain of death from one of your superior officers to do it. You're not part of some ideologically driven cult-like state, as were the German troops, subsumed to some ethno-genocidal ideology, creating a Lebensraum for your thousand-year Reich. You're doing it for the man beside you. You're fighting for your fellow squad members. You're fighting for your mother at home, your sister, your kid brother, your grandparents, your city, your town. You're fighting for one reason alone, really: to defeat evil. Because you know that evil exists. By now you know about the death camps. You know about the Holocaust, the murder of the handicapped, the Jews, the Roma, the Catholics, the summary executions of priests, of more than 20,000 Polish officers and civilians in the Katyn Forest, killed by the Soviets, who are supposed to be your quote-unquote allies. You know evil exists, and you are there to defeat it or die. That is still our mission. For as long as we breathe and our hearts pound with life, our job is to face evil down and to crush it, as it always has been and as it always will. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump. This is America First. Make sure you are subscribed. Go to Spotify, plug in my name. Never miss an episode. You're listening to America First.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.